Hey everyone, I'm Ellen Mayer, and you're listening to Illinois. It's a podcast answering your questions about our state government, how it works, how it doesn't work, and how it impacts your life. Since I launched this podcast, I've gotten lots of questions that cover a pretty broad range of topics in Illinois government. But there's one topic, one particularly notorious individual that folks are really curious about. Maybe you can guess where this is going.
Madigan is not a beloved figure in Illinois.
Dictator for the state. I mean, it would be pretty devastating.
House Speaker Mike Madigan is to blame for blocking
education.
What
that could mean for Illinois' most powerful politician.
I heard from six people who all asked more or less the same question about House Speaker Mike Madigan. One of those people is Hillary Clifford. She's from Chicago, but she lives in Washington, D.C. now. And sometimes she finds herself in a position that might sound familiar to any Illinoisan with family or friends from out of state.
When you're proud to be from Illinois, but you go to a bar in D.C. and they have a poster of all of our governors who've gone to prison, you know, you kind of feel like you're doing cleanup for the state sometimes, talking about our reputation, talking about, oh, politicians in Illinois are all corrupt. Then you look at Madigan, and he might confirm some of those suspicions that people hold. So, I mean, I think that the Madigans are a really interesting entry point to talking about this crazy state and its legislature and its politics.
So here is Hillary's question.
I believe my question was, how am I supposed to feel about the Madigans? I'm interested in how the Madigans got where they got, but also how they've stayed where they are and how they're able to exert such control and influence in our state, particularly Mike.
Christine Schmidt had a similar question.
So my question is, why do people keep voting for Mike Madigan and what is his power structure?
And so did Ben Taylor.
It seems like things really have to have his blessing or his sign off before they happen.
Michael Joseph Madigan has been Speaker of the Illinois House of Representatives for 33 years, with a two-year break in the 1990s when Republicans had control of the House. That makes him the longest-serving legislative leader of any state legislature in modern history. Now, the speakership is the most powerful position in the House, and it's one of the most powerful positions in state government, alongside the Senate president and the governor. And on top of all that, Madigan has also been the chairman for the state's Democratic Party since 1998. So our question askers are definitely on to something here. Madigan is a very powerful person. In fact, people have been speculating about Madigan's power for decades, to the point where he's taken on a kind of a mythic quality with nicknames like the Velvet Hammer and the King of Illinois. So it's really no wonder that people are so curious. Honestly, what is the deal with this guy? Every question asker has their own spin on this question, and we're going to hear from all of them over the course of the episode. But the main question that we're tackling is this. How did Mike Madigan get so much power, and how does he keep it? This is a big episode, so we're going to break it down into four parts. First, we'll learn about Madigan's early career against the backdrop of Chicago machine politics. Then, we'll take a look at the redistricting process and discuss how a win for the Democrats becomes a win for Mike. After that, we'll follow the money and look at campaign finance in the Democratic Party. And finally, we'll consider Madigan's legacy. Part 1, The Man and the Machine. Eliana Sigel Epstein is one of our question askers. I asked her if she has a hunch what the root of Madigan's power might be, and here's what she told me.
I'm sure it has something to do with the dailies and with the machine, but I don't really know what that machine is, and also like how Madigan plays into that as seemingly like a vestige of that machine.
So Eliana is right. To understand the Madigan origin story, we do need a bit of a history lesson on machine politics. So I went to talk to someone who's been around the block a couple times. His name is Charlie Wheeler.
When people talk about daily machine politics, what do they mean by that?
Well, basically, Richard J. Daley inherited and perfected the last remaining example of the big city political machine that was common in a lot of different places.
Charlie covered Illinois politics for the Chicago Sun-Times for 24 years. He says when people talk about the machine, they're referring to a time when the Democratic Party was actually a more significant force in government than the government.
So it was typical, this would be probably 50 years ago, if you had a problem in a neighborhood of Chicago, you didn't call the city per se. You'd call your precinct committeeman, or you'd call the ward committeeman and say, I need this tree trimmed, or I need this pothole fixed. And you didn't go through the aldermen. The aldermen were sort of like, they were there, but unless they were ward committeemen, they weren't that important.
So in each ward of the city, you had Democratic committeemen, also known as ward bosses, and they used party funds to turn out the vote and support Democratic candidates. And all of these ward bosses reported to Mayor Daley, who was also the chair of the Cook County Democratic Party. In Daley's Chicago, the machine didn't just trim your tree or fix your street. It also gave out jobs. And that's where this thing called patronage comes in. Patronage is the practice of rewarding your political supporters with employment. If you worked hard for the party, the boss would get you a government job.
And there were any number of people whose job with the city or with the county depended on how well they were able to turn out votes on election day.
And that really is how the Daley machine worked. You scratched the party's back, the party scratched your back, and the city government was made up of a whole bunch of loyal back scratchers. And because he controlled all these patronage jobs, Mayor Daley was a powerful figure, not just in the city and the county, but in state government as well.
So this huge apparatus was set up, and Mike Madigan grew up through that.
Mike Madigan grew up on Chicago's southwest side, in an area that was once an Irish-American stronghold. His dad, Michael Flynn Madigan, was the Democratic committeeman for the 13th Ward, and he was a friend of Mayor Daley's. After graduating from Loyola Law School in 1967, Madigan, the younger, went home and got elected to his dad's old position in the 13th Ward. At just 27, Madigan was the youngest ward boss in the city. And after that, things moved pretty fast.
But his first publicly elected office was as a delegate to the Constitutional Convention.
One of Charlie Wheeler's first assignments for the Sun-Times was covering the state's Constitutional Convention in 1970. And he says that Mayor Daley had a couple things that he really wanted to see in a new constitution.
So are you saying that Daley had an interest in getting people at the convention who would promote his agenda?
Oh, sure. People who would be loyal foot soldiers.
Yeah.
And Madigan would have been in that camp.
Just a year after the convention, in 1971, Mike Madigan was elected to the Illinois House of Representatives. He served his home district on the southwest side, and he continued to be a loyal foot soldier for Daley. 6 years after that, Madigan became the House Majority Leader, which is the second most powerful role in the House. Then, in 1981, he made it all the way to the Speaker's podium. I asked Charlie what accounts for Madigan's speedy rise in government, and he says it's not just a matter of being in Daley's good graces.
Well, I would say, first of all, the guy is very talented, he's a very hard worker, he's very bright, and he puts in the time. I don't know if he still does or not. I suspect he does. But when I was a reporter covering the General Assembly, Madigan was noted for reading every bill. And not all lawmakers do.
Even as early as the Constitutional Convention, Charlie noticed that Madigan seemed a cut above the rest.
One of the things that you sometimes find, and I would find anyway back in the day, some Chicago representatives and senators would come down and they would look down their nose at people from other parts of the state, and they would not have any for want of a better term, any empathy with the other members. Madigan wasn't like that. Madigan went out of his way to learn about issues that were of importance in different regions of the state.
And Charlie says that experience ultimately helped Madigan become an effective leader in a state with sharp regional and cultural divisions.
So we have all these regions, and to be a successful leader, you have to, I believe, you have to understand the issues back home for the lawmakers from these different areas, and you have to respect them and work with them. Madigan was able to do that.
So Madigan was an eager student. He read the bills, he studied the laws, he learned the broad political landscape of Illinois, but he also learned machine politics. Madigan himself has admitted that in the daily years, his ward operated like any other ward in Chicago, churning out patronage jobs. Now, people tend to say that those machine days are over. In the 1970s, there were a series of federal court orders that cracked down on corruption and patronage in Chicago. But it is worth noting that in 2014, reporters from the Chicago Tribune found more than 400 current or former government employees who had strong political ties to Mike Madigan, including some instances when the man personally picked up the phone to get those folks a job or a promotion or a contract. All this to say, some of those old machine practices might still contribute to Madigan's power structure. Part 2, The Man and His Maps. I want to talk about another thing that facilitated Mike Madigan's rise to the top. It's the process for redistricting in Illinois. Back in 1981, Madigan was very involved in that process, and with a combination of luck and skill, he pulled off a big victory for the Democrats. And that established a feedback loop that still exists to this day. When the Democrats win, Madigan wins, and vice versa.
And you mentioned redistricting. So would you mind explaining to me how exactly does the redistricting process work in Illinois?
Well, the terms are set out in the Constitution, and the Constitution says that
every 10 years, the U.S. Census provides us with updated demographic data for Illinois. So the Constitution says that our legislative districts should be redrawn every 10 years.
And the process is set out where the legislature gets first crack. And if they can pass legislation and the governor signs it, then that becomes the map. Now, if that doesn't work, there's a call for a commission to be appointed, basically by partisan leaders with equal numbers of Democrats and Republicans. And they meet and attempt to craft a map.
In 1981, Mike Madigan took the lead on drawing a legislative map that would favor Democrats in the next election. You probably know this process as gerrymandering.
Yes, gerrymandering. The redrawing
thing I call gerrymandering.
But gerrymandering is a real problem.
And of course, Republicans do it too. So they had their own map. The legislature couldn't come to a compromise between those two maps, so it went to that bipartisan redistricting committee. But they couldn't agree either.
And if that still results in a deadlock, then the Constitution says the Supreme Court shall name two people not from the same political party, and the Secretary of State by lot shall draw one of them to be the ninth and tie-breaking member on the commission.
Yes, you heard that right. The political fate of the state comes down to luck of the draw. In 1981, two names went into a hat, one Democrat and one Republican. That hat, by the way, was a top hat once worn by Abraham Lincoln. And the Secretary of State pulled out the Democrat's name.
Democrats won the draw, and they got to craft the map, and Madigan was very heavily involved.
Now, keep in mind that in 1981, the Republicans had the majority in the House. But the Democrats won the draw, so Madigan's map is the one that went into effect for the next year's elections. And this map was really good for the Democrats.
And it enabled the Democrats to control the legislature for the next 10 years.
They swept the elections and regained their majority in the House. Another thing to keep in mind, the Speaker is elected by the other members of the House. So if the Democrats have the majority, that means they'll be able to elect a Democratic speaker. And in 1983, they chose Madigan. Like I said, when the Democrats win, Madigan wins. So for all but two of the last 35 years, Madigan has been running the show in the House of Representatives. As Speaker, he is the man with the gavel, and the House rules give him a lot of control over what gets done during a session. He gets to decide when a bill will be heard and when it will get a vote. He manages debates. He appoints people to leadership positions in the various committees. And he's also in charge of the House budget and its administrative staff, even security. So Madigan got to the top of the House through a combination of luck, smarts, and good old-fashioned machine politics. But then the question is, how does he stay at the top? Part 3, the man with the money. On top of being the speaker, there's this other job that we haven't really discussed yet. Madigan is also the chair of the Democratic Party of Illinois, and he's had that job since 1998. Before I started paying attention to Illinois government, I don't think I really thought about what a political party does. I just sort of thought a party was an affiliation of people with similar political beliefs, a voting bloc, basically. But I've quickly learned that the Illinois Democratic Party is an organization. It has a structure, a hierarchy, and most importantly, it has a lot of money.
Parties are, I would say, their main goal is fundraising, and they have to be extremely good at both raising the money and then distributing it.
You might recognize that voice from the very first episode of Illinois. Hannah Meisel was our first guest, and she recently started a new job as the Statehouse reporter for The Daily Line, which is a newsletter about Chicago and state politics. I asked her to help me understand what the Democratic Party does and how that plays into Madigan's power base.
Another thing that parties are going to do is recruit people to run. You know, they have their eye on people who are in, you know, small government or people who are active in their communities.
So basically, the party looks out for new Democratic candidates across the state who have a good chance of winning, especially in districts that could be flipped from red to blue. And of course, they also throw support behind vulnerable incumbents who might just need a little help holding on to their seat.
So when Madigan and the party writ large, when they decide, okay, we're going to support this candidate, what does that support actually look like? Is it just money or is there other stuff they're doing too?
No, there's so much more than money. You know, a campaign is a huge people operation. You need everyone from people to collect the signatures at the beginning of the campaign process to, you know, people who are going to walk the district, knock on doors with the candidate.
If a candidate has the party's support, they basically get a pre-packaged campaign in a box. Just add water and start knocking on doors. They get staffers, they get media training, campaign strategy, policy support. And at the top of this whole operation is Mike Madigan. He controls the party's resources, and he decides who gets access to them. In other words, he gets people elected, not just in the House, but throughout state government.
Yeah, so to that point, does Madigan's power to get people elected, does that mean that people are beholden to him? Does that kind of contribute to how powerful he's become in that sense?
Yeah, I mean, like, there is definitely going to be some reciprocity. But again, you know, people who seek office, they don't seek office so they can serve Mike Madigan. They seek office so that they can serve their districts, serve constituents. You know, a lot of times, yeah, they also might want to serve themselves in some ways. You know, that can probably be another episode for you. But yes, are they beholden? Yeah, a little bit.
Remember that the Speaker of the House is an elected position. Every 2 years, Madigan needs the House Democrats to vote him in for another term. And every 2 years, they do. And it probably doesn't hurt that Madigan helped many of those Democrats get elected.
It must be nice. It must be nice. the money and see where it goes.
Again, when the Democrats win, Madigan wins. Now I want to talk more about Madigan's money, because he has a lot of it. If you're trying to follow the money in Illinois politics, the best place to look is an amazing resource called Illinois Sunshine. It's a website that makes it easy to track political contributions and helps you see how much campaign money somebody has at their fingertips. The website was created by the Illinois Campaign for Political Reform, which is a mouthful, so we'll call it ICPR. To understand just how much money Madigan controls, I went to talk with ICPR's executive director, Mary Miro.
And so for your listeners out there, we've got some fun facts and figures.
The first thing you need to know is that Madigan doesn't just control the Democratic Party fund. He's actually got four different pots of money that he's working with.
At 1.5 of the 13th Ward. The Democratic majority is 4.7. That's a separate committee. Friends of Mike Madigan is 2.6. And then the Democratic Party is at 5.3.
I know. We just threw a lot of numbers your way. And to be clear, we're talking in the millions here. So when Mary says the Democratic Party is at 5.3, she means that it has $5,300,000. So if we pool all of Madigan's funds together, how much money is that?
Let's go back to Madigan in terms of kind of summing up all of the money. It's a $14.1 million on hand. Mm. So it doesn't take a full account of basically all the money raised and all the money that has gone to support different candidates over the past, 40 years.
Again, at the time when I spoke with Mary Miro, Madigan had a total of $14.1 million on hand. And Mary says no other legislator comes close to that amount of money. The runner-up is John Cullerton, who's Madigan's counterpart in the Senate. He controls just two funds with a total of $2.8 million. No other lawmaker even breaks a million. Of course, the millionaire and billionaire candidates for governor are a different story, which we'll get to later. But right now, I want to take a moment to reflect. We've talked a lot about the different factors that contribute to Madigan's power structure. The machine, the money, the maps, the many beholden Democrats in the House. But now that he has all that power, what does Madigan actually do with it? Our question asker Theo Anderson was wondering about that.
And the second part of my question is, does he use his power to push an agenda, or is it primarily about the power for Madigan?
I asked both Charlie and Hannah to think about Theo's question.
He has no public policy agenda per se. I used to tease him about it, that, you have this power, why don't you use it for something? And he wasn't interested.
But Charlie thinks that Madigan does have a few policy priorities.
The things that have motivated him the most over the years have been protecting the city of Chicago and its institutions, like the mayor's office or like Chicago schools, public schools, and also standing up for the institution of the General Assembly as one of the co-equal branches of government.
And of course, there's that overarching political goal.
But the other important thing I was told very early on is that all Madigan cares about at the end of the day is maintaining his Democratic majority in the House. And that's a lesson that, has stuck with me. Whether or not it's fully true all the time, but it's something that you always have to keep in the back of your mind when you're covering Illinois.
Okay, everyone, we've made it to part four, the man and his reputation. Most of our question askers have pretty strong misgivings about Madigan. The consensus seems to be that no one man should have all that power. Take Ben Taylor from Mahomet, Illinois.
A lot of power in the state is concentrated with Speaker Madigan. How do you see that changing? Or do you see that changing?
Ben isn't very hopeful that anything could change, at least not in the short term. I put this question to Charlie Wheeler, and he was also doubtful.
Well, I think the power is there in the office. It doesn't matter who the speaker is. I think the longer he stays in office, his longevity has helped him become better at what he does. But the office, by definition, is very strong.
But I think there are a few levers in state government that could lessen the speaker's power, if that's what you wanted to do. One option would be to establish term limits. According to public opinion polls from the Paul Simon Institute,
say that 10 times fast,
this is a very popular idea. In fact, the state Senate recently did pass a resolution adopting a 10-year term limit for Senate leadership. But we don't have anything like that in the House. Another option would be to change the House rules, which currently give the Speaker a lot of centralized power. Now, would it be easy? No. As long as Madigan is running the show, it's a real long shot to establish term limits or change the House rules. But I think it is valuable to acknowledge that there are structural factors that help Mike Madigan maintain power. And if people wanted, those structures could be changed. But here's the next question. Does everyone agree that Madigan should have less power? Of course, the Republicans think so, but two of our question askers are wondering about Madigan's own constituents, like Christine Schmidt.
Why do people keep voting for Mike Madigan, and what is his power structure?
And Bob Kibble.
Specifically, why hasn't anyone been able to topple him in his own district around Midway?
It's a good question because statewide, Madigan's approval rating is pretty darn low, even among Democrats. But when I put this question to Charlie, he said it's really quite simple. That district has changed a lot. It started out sort of white working class, Irish, and now it is predominantly Latino. Why do people keep voting for him there?
I suppose because they think that he delivers on what they want.
Yeah. Has anybody tried to mount a serious campaign against him?
There was a challenge in the last primary, I believe, and Madigan won pretty handily. He's been challenged off and on down through the years. Part of it boils down to people want their legislators to take care of their needs. Madigan does a good job of that.
But there are a few things in very recent history that might, just might, be chipping away at Madigan's power base. First, we have the billionaire and Democratic candidate for governor, J.B. Pritzker. He's been funding his campaign with millions of his own dollars. And he's put a few million into the Democratic Party fund, too. Mary Muro from ICPR says that this is a big change in Illinois politics.
So what's interesting now is if you have a self-funding candidate who has their own resources, they're less reliant on the committee.
It used to be that Madigan was the man with the money. And because of that, he and the party as a whole had a lot of influence over Democratic candidates.
But if you have the money going from the candidate back to the party, you can ask this question of like, well, who's influencing whom?
Now Pritzker is the man with even more money. And that could mean that Madigan's influence is waning. And then, of course, there's the Me Too reckoning in Springfield.
Springfield tonight, where sexual harassment allegations have cost a top aide to House Speaker Mike Madigan his job.
In the past few months, three different men from Madigan's inner circle have been accused of sexual harassment and/or bullying. The first woman to come forward was Elena Hampton, who is a former campaign worker. And she filed a lawsuit saying that Madigan's operation took too long to respond to her complaints and ultimately retaliated against her for reporting.
This is not simply about standing up for myself and my own career. It is also about the countless other women who have been subject to this type of harassment.
The other two women are Sherry Garrett and Marianne Longcar. They didn't accuse Madigan of anything specifically, but they both experienced harassment from men in Madigan's own leadership team. It happened on his watch, and he's definitely taking the heat. It's like they say, with great power comes great responsibility. For the longest time, there's been this convenient feedback loop, right? When the Democrats win, Madigan wins. So the question is, will the Me Too reckoning galvanize enough dissent within the Democratic Party to disrupt that cycle? And I think the answer is maybe? A few people have called for Madigan to step down from at least one of his major positions in state politics. Nevertheless, he was just reelected as chair of the Democratic Party. only one person voted against him. The guy is the picture of health, but he's 76, he's not going to be speaker forever, and that brings us back to Hillary, our question asker from the very beginning of this episode.
I think it would be really interesting to form kind of what is Madigan's legacy and what that means for our state. You know, will he be on the level of the people we name our highways after, or will he just be another Illinois politician? And what does that mean about all of us?
You know, I think after a couple of years, when people look back, I think that people will see that Madigan has had a major hand, if not, you know, the most powerful hand in keeping Illinois blue in a landscape of state houses that have overwhelmingly turned red in recent years across the country. Yeah. You know, in the South, obviously, where blue dog Democrats have basically died off, in the Midwest, where, you know, Republicans have gained a ton of power.
But of course, Madigan will also probably leave behind a mess. We still have a big budget shortfall. We still don't adequately fund our pensions. We still need more funding for our schools. Unfortunately, this list of bad things that I don't totally understand could go on.
I don't think that any one person can be blamed for all that's wrong with Illinois right now. It's taken us decades to get to this point, and history tells us that really it's been Illinois political tradition for, you know, a century to overpromise, you know, sometimes for the sake of votes, often for the sake of votes, and then neglect to actually fund things.
But Hannah does think Madigan will have to shoulder some of that blame. He's just been in power for a long time. It happened on his watch, and with great power comes great responsibility. Big thank you to all of our question askers who participated in this episode, and please don't forget to submit a question of your own. Are you wondering something about how our government works, how it doesn't work? Is something really confusing you or bothering you? Please send a question our way. Go to illinoispodcast.com/ask, and remember that's Illinois spelled with an E. This episode was produced by me and Samantha Smiley. Our logo is by Kayla Ginsberg from The Radical Stitchery. Our theme music is by Jacob Chaparro from The Broken Nose Collective. I'm Ellen Mayer, and I'll see you next time on Illinois.